Impact Leaders, the podcast on impact leaders, influencers, and institutions supporting the companies that are solving the world's biggest challenges. And this is your host, JP Dahlman. Impact Leaders is brought to you by Fast Forward 2030 and Real Changers. Visit fastforward2030.com to learn how to include the global goals into your business models, and realchangers.com to find talent and careers with impact.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Impact Leaders. In today's episode of Impact Leaders, we have Essa Saloranta as our guest. Hi, Essa. Welcome, and thank you for being us today.
Hi, JP. Thanks for having me. It's an honor. You have a great series of podcasts. And I have to say, I stumbled onto this one really by sort of an accident, because one of my LinkedIn connections, Kerry Krasinski, was recently in your series, and I saw that. I definitely had to listen to that, and I thought, well, this is a whole lot of other interesting stuff in your series. So it's cool to be here. Thanks very much for having me.
No, a real pleasure. And actually, you know, because of, you know, I always tell people you have to take action, and it's exactly what you did straight after. So you may actually be jumping the queue of, you know, other recordings that we have, because just of, you know, following up straight away after listening to Carrie. So, and it goes to show again of the power of the network, right? Which is really, really good.
That's right.
And what is very interesting, although Essa's last name sounds a bit Italian, Essa is actually in Helsinki, Finland right now. So we're going, we're going to cross the other side now towards the Nordic region. So again, very excited to have, I know, somebody from the Nordic region being, I think you are the first one that we have in the podcast. So that's brilliant.
Cool.
Fantastic. So just a quick intro about Essa for the benefit of the listeners. So Essa is an ESG and sustainability professional with investment management experience covering all major asset classes. He's a thought leader in sustainable technology, ESG policy, and integration, focusing currently on social responsibility, AI, and digital transformation, and managing EQ Blue Planet, a sustainable technology fund launched in 2015, which is one of the funds of EQ Asset Management in Finland. Is that a good enough short intro?
Yeah, that's perfect. I mean, we are an independent asset management firm, and the stock is listed in the Helsinki Exchange. But yeah, this is more or less correct what you had in front of you.
And as it is kind of our tradition, the first question to all our guests is, what is impact investing? Perhaps, you know, we could also throw the, what is sustainable investing, if you want to talk about that first. What is it for you?
That is a very good question. And I'm afraid there is no really simple answer to it. And probably this will start already a very lengthy monologue on the subject, but I think we may get back to it at some point more precisely. But for me, I think you have to really look at first of, you know, what are the kind of terms that people are talking about in the ESG and sustainability space. And when you kind of land on the planet of sustainability or responsible investing, you quickly notice that there's a lot of sort of acronyms and a lot of jargon and a lot of, you know, different combinations of stuff like ESG. You talk about SRI, you talk about ethical, you talk about negative screening and integration. So you'll quickly find out that, yes, indeed, we are in the financial markets, because the financial markets love to do things this way. They like to kind of get a different kind of a sort of a branded word for various things. But for me, when I really think about impact and sustainability and responsibility, I think these are the three main areas and three main words that I kind of go inside my head. And when I think about opportunities or what's happening in the world, generally speaking, I think, first of all, you have to really separate between responsible and sustainability. So responsibility and sustainability, very often you can see that these terms are pretty much interchangeable. People use them quite loosely and, you know, happily as synonyms. But, you know, the way I look at things, You know, you can be a company which is perfectly responsible and it's doing all the kind of sort of you would kind of anticipate to be the responsible things to be doing. They can go and cut their CO2 emissions to zero. They can even become negative CO2 participants in the economy. They can hire a diverse, ethnically, racially, whatever, the whole human resources can be built on hiring the best mix of various different backgrounds in their people. They can do all kinds of things which are really regarded as responsible. They pay all the taxes whatsoever. But at the end of the day, it doesn't mean that the company in itself would be sustainable in the way that I kind of look at things. And that means that you can, if you don't have the right strategy, all of the, what I mentioned before, becomes useless because then, you know, it may actually work against you. So you may be focused on completely the wrong things and you don't know how to utilize the responsible actions within your strategy. So responsibility doesn't necessarily mean, to me, sustainability. But when you have the right strategy and you use responsible actions and you think about your strategy from the sustainability point of view, become a future-proof company, as I call it. And I think there's a little bit of a distinction there. And then the impact, and I think this is really crucial, the impact that is actually what the company does. For me, the impact is what it does to their customers and how they use the product, how they use the environment, how much waste they produce, how much water they use, et cetera, et cetera. And how they deal with their supply chain, how they deal with the government they are in, and how they deal with the shareholders. So impact is what actually the company does. And I think that's very important going forward, especially. I think when the ESG space or the sustainability space is now going to be developing over the next few years, I think the impact is really where people should be focusing. Definitely as an investor, I'm interested in what the company does. Now, a lot of the talk in the ESG space is very much focused on how you look like. I mean, how the companies want to present themselves to investors in their reporting, in the kind of data that they tell to investors that how they, you know, how they emit CO2, for example. And that's about, you know, what's been going on in the past and right now. But impact is really something which has also a future dimension in it, and it's more linked with strategy. So that's why I think impact is really the key issue. And I'm really sorry I took a very lengthy answer to that, but that's really how I think.
And yes, and sure, like you say, we will look at some examples in the next questions, and then it will be kind of even more clear in terms of know what that means. And there is, and I think that also looking at, you know, some of the materials that you share, is you do focus on kind of the social impact, and you talk about social impact of everything that companies do as well, right?
Yes. And you know, the background for that is really, you can't really think about, I mean, very often people just focus, and the environmental issues are very urgent. I get that. I mean, it's hugely important to get reduce CO2 emissions, and climate change is a massive threat to our existence. I mean, I get that. I mean, it is very important, but you have to remember that, you know, climate change is also a social issue. And if you think about what's been going on with the refugee situation in Europe, for example, I mean, it is very much climate related. I mean, because of the drought and because of the famine in Africa, people have been forced to kind of migrate. And, you know, that becomes very quickly a social issue. It becomes a political issue. So you can't really separate many of these things entirely. I mean, everything is kind of interlinked. And so you have to look at the social issues also more widely, especially when you're dealing with technology, because technology will have a huge impact on the way how we work, how we get employed in the future to begin with, what is the nature of work in the future. And that's going to be a very massive social change. The way data is used, for example, in the way companies collect data and how they use that currently mostly for advertising, which is kind of a very much of a tricky area for me. You know, the whole data sphere and the data economy, data privacy is immensely social issue. I mean, companies who are, in my mind, future-proof, they have thought about how they use data and how they kind of exist in a wider society going forward in the future. And that's why I think it's extremely important.
And again, we will come back to that specifically, I think, on the AI point. But now, again, just for a bit of context for people to understand, you know, EQ Asset Management and more specifically, perhaps Blue Planet. So EQ Asset Management, as you said, and I recommend always people to go to the website. So it's eq.fi. And it says, so EQ manages in-house Finnish, Nordic, European and emerging markets equity investment base on a long experience from direct investing in your core markets. In US and Japan, you utilize index funds managed by Vanguard. So, and the fixed incomes markets, you manage a wide range of funds covering all major fixed income asset classes. In addition to this, you also, so the fixed income and equity funds, you also have real estate funds, which is interesting because in your website it says also worth considering, but your real estate funds are prominent, right? And you have also kind of funds of funds. So if people go to your website, they'll see that you have a kind of really nice or wide range of different funds, you know, for their choice, for their selection. And I think we were talking about before, you manage kind of in total around 10 billion euros.
That's right.
Which, you know, a large part of that is real estate and then obviously the fixed income and the equities. And then more specifically, so you have EQ Blue Planet and EQ Blue Planet BS AG. And this, right. This is the fund that you manage, which is around, we were talking about it before, 40 million euros, all of which is mainly kind of coming from institutional investors, right?
That's right. And high net worth individuals.
Yes.
So yeah, the bulk of the assets in the firm is actually in private equity and real estate. So we manage private equity fund of funds.
Yeah.
And we've been doing that business for over 20 years. And we're definitely one of the largest in the Nordics on that side. So there's a deep understanding of the private markets as well within the firm. Like you said, from 2015, I've been managing a fund called Blue Planet, which was really founded on a fund that I used to manage for a long time previously. And that fund was an energy fund, a very standard, old-fashioned utilities and energy fund, mm-hmm. which I did for a number of years. And you know, back in 2015, after I had spent quite some time leading and developing the firm's ESG policy and framework, I had the opportunity to retake my fund under my management. And I took it under the condition that I can do whatever I want to. And I completely built the Blue Planet from bottom up with a new style so that it would be sustainability in the core idea generation process rather than having, what typically happens with older funds is that you integrate some of the ESG aspects into an existing investment process. But for Blue Planet, what we did was we founded an entirely new investment process using the experience of the energy system, of course, and understanding of what's really relevant and how you could innovatively look at things, with your background on infrastructure and managing those assets. But really the idea was to have a sustainability first idea generation process. And I think that's very unique and quite exceptional because typically funds are integrated, like the ESG is integrated into funds, but this one is different.
Yeah. So yeah, and for the benefit of people that may not understand that subtle difference, right? It's like these funds that already existed and then they try to make them into ESG rather than from inception, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, because if you look at the fund management industry and the way the ESG has been adopted in the industry, it's quite logical. Obviously, I mean, the fund management industry has invested billions into existing investment processes. So you can't really go and change all of those investment processes at the same time. And in some of the processes, an integration of certain ESG type of new tools is perfectly fine. But if you want to do something which is really unique and really, you know, different and taking up the challenge of having a view of what is the better world, how does it look like? Like, you know, I'm a bit of a futurist myself. So I try to imagine, okay, what we really should be having in the future. What is the kind of a world that would be smarter and better and, you know, we would be a sustainable world, so to speak. And then you can start thinking about the process with that worldview and what you want to really have. What are the kind of investments that you should make to get there? And it's a different approach. And there aren't that many actually around, especially with a bit of a track record. So, you know, it's exciting, but it's in a way a little bit frustrating as well, because there isn't any really sort of that or that many comparable animals around you. So you're something of a front runner, but that's what it takes, exactly.
Yeah. And again, you know, we were having a separate call before, and what I was telling you is that that's exactly why I think we need to continue to do exactly what we're doing right now, which is this podcast, which is, you know, to share with people what others are doing and to show the results, which I'll mention a couple of points if that's okay, and also, you know, the best practices so that people can emulate and replicate, right? So on that note, what I just wanted to share with people as well is, and I'm sure they will read this whenever they go and look for you, but it's kind of EQ Blue Planet is a leading sustainability fund with Morningstar 5 stars and Citywire AAA kind of manager rate. And you were mentioning about kind of the process, which is one of the questions that many investors and funds that want to do more on this area kind of struggle with and ask the question. So if I pick up a little bit of the brief description of your investment process, if you don't mind, I'm just going to quickly run through the different steps that you do, and then maybe you can pick one of them to share, you know, with in more detail. But you do a kind of you screen sustainable strategies. You analyze the sustainable growth or business impact. You do a deep dive of fundamentals, which most people do. You ask yourself, does the sustainable business component drive unrealized value? In this case, and just to reiterate, it's an equities fund. So is the stock as good as the company? You set an appropriate weight. You monitor and you manage risk, right? So those are kind of the different steps that you follow.
That's right.
And anything that you say is different from what other people do, and why do you think that's different? Why do you think that's good?
I think one of the things which when you analyze, when you look at fund presentations, very often you see a funnel approach. With the funnel, I mean, they show a silo or
20,000 stocks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, 20,000 stocks, exactly. And you start with a very large number and then you narrow down into the portfolio. So this type of thinking that I use, it doesn't actually work like that. So you have to have, for me, it's really the worldview where I kind of think, okay, where should we be? What should we be doing in order to do all of this in a smarter way and that the people would be happier? So the idea generation really starts from, there are multiple sources of where you get the ideas and the light bulb moments, so to speak. So, and these stocks you can't really screen by using, for example, Bloomberg data that I want to have X percentage coming from renewable energy and screen me all of those companies. And one of the reasons is that a lot of these companies actually have strategies and products and developments which are not yet there on the top line in a significant way. So that you were screening them by using criteria, for example, I mean, where can I get the revenue impact, which is directly in sustainable areas, doesn't always necessarily work. So that's different. And analyzing the business impact of sustainability strategies, I think that's really key, because you have to understand that, you know, the driver will have to move the needle in a global scale one way or another. And secondly, the driver, the sustainability driver, will have to move the needle at some point, already perhaps now, but definitely in the future, within the company as well. And thirdly, I ask the question, is the stock as good as the company? Because when you're managing money in a mutual fund, you will get the returns from the stock market. You mean the companies will deliver their results, but the stock market and its valuation will actually define how much return you get and deliver to your unit holders. So that, you know, you always have to kind of have a separation between is the stock as good as the company. But there are many examples, like Beyond Meat, for example, which had a massively successful IPO because it's a pure play plant-based burger, kind of funky and fun idea. In my view, that kind of a stock is completely separated from any company fundamentals. I mean, I think it can go crazy. And sometimes, and I've seen it before, when the solar companies came and started doing their, you know, developing the first solar, if you remember, solar and wind companies, they had massively, very quickly expanding valuations because they were the first ones and they represented the theme for the future. But they were the only stocks really that you could invest. And sometimes the stock becomes a proxy of a greater thing. It may not be sustainable from the stock perspective actually to be owning that. So I always kind of look at that as well. What I mean by unrealized potential from the sustainability drivers, it's pretty much the same thing. You have to look at as well that, okay, is this already widely understood that this company is a leader in, you know, a certain segment of sustainability? And if it is, it probably is already reflected in the valuation as well. So I prefer to look at things which are not necessarily yet recognized fully, but I think, you know, they could be important in the future.
And before I dive into some of the specifics, you know, of some of the investments that you have in your portfolio, I just wanted to again highlight in terms of this approach and also on the impact side that you mentioned as well, which is another question I have a bit later on. But in terms of your actual outcomes or results so far, you know, and this is quite nice because your performance is available for people to see. So we can kind of mention a little bit about it. But EQ Blue Planet, basically since, you know, 2015 inception, has kind of outperformed, you know, your benchmark, which is the MSCI World Index. And you are at, I was trying to look at one of the numbers I picked up, I think, from your website, which was you are at kind of 14%, I think, right, on the last 3 years.
Yeah, the overperformance over the index on an annualized term, which is the way I look at it, is typically, this fluctuates. It's primarily, well, I mean, a large portion of it is if technology is in favor. I mean, that annualized spread against the benchmark, you know, can be as high up as, you know, between 6% and 7% on an annual basis, net of all fees. But, you know, typically it tends to be fluctuate around 4%. But yeah, there's a trend line, you know, which I'm, you know, hopefully continues in the future as well. But yeah, there's been a trend line, which is quite clear that it is performing better than the world equities, generally speaking.
Okay. So I didn't catch the actual percentage. What is the?
It's roughly 4%, 400 basis points. So 4%, and that's net of all fees. So that's what the investor gets if they pay full fees to, of the fund.
Okay. And then in terms of, may touch a little bit on that. So in terms of your kind of main investors, you were saying that there were institutional investors and high net worth individuals. Do they come to you specifically with a mandate or do you go to them to pitch this specific fund?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. What we're seeing increasingly now in this market is that, you know, especially our core clients, which are kind of middle tier pension funds, and we have lots of different foundations, charities, types of university, kind of entitlement funds. They are increasingly paying attention to what they are owning in their portfolios in terms of what types of funds and what is the impact and what is the ESG, the overview of their holdings. So there is definitely demand, which is picking up on that side where people are, you know, they notice the fund and they approach us even. But, you know, in this industry, it's very much hard work. You have to meet, you know, people quite often to get the message through. They may follow your performance for a couple of years before they do their first investment. But it's a slow process. But, you know, I think over the last 12 months, I think the ability to be able to present the idea And the reception has become definitely much better because there's a lot of increase in general awareness about sustainability and environmental issues and all of that. So I think it's, you know, you can definitely feel that.
Yeah, because that's the, and I want to touch on that in terms of, you know, the growth and the scalability of it, but let me come back to that and what kind of stops, you know, people from doing that. Okay, so if we talk about kind of integrating or you know, as you talked about, you know, setting up, identifying ESG and identifying sustainability and identifying kind of impact, and we talked a little bit about the process that you have created. But can we just dig a little bit more into like the impact side? So, and also maybe to use as an example. So, and this is quite interesting, right? So if I look at kind of your presentation of the fund, you do have kind of an emphasis or a focus on technology, which is kind of your focus number one.
Yeah.
And then you have, you know, your social sustainability, which is your focus number two. So, and you have your themes, which are around IoT and robotics, AI leaders. You talked to me about before as well, the importance of the supply chain, but, you know, split in terms of, you know, how are we going to provide everything that we need? And then you have a few other more, transport, logistics, etc. But then when I look, let's say, at your top equities, stocks, you know, on your portfolio, if I'm correct here on one of the slides that I saw, page 12, which people cannot see, but anyway, you have Danone, you have Cisco, you have Adobe Systems, you have Logitech, you have Oracle, right? Which are all,
that's right.
Well, aside from Danone, which maybe you could argue that has a lot of technology to do what they do, but it's quite technology focused, right? And you mentioned Logitech as one of the examples before to me. So how do you look at the impact of some of these companies?
I think technology for me, and the reason why technology is so key in the focus, is really coming from the fact that how do we do things in a smarter way in the future? Already actually now, because a lot of these technologies, these are not science fiction. They are happening already as we're speaking. So when I think about how do we sort out mass transit in big cities, I mean, we have to use all the data. We have to use all the sensors and kind of location signals over where people are moving, what they are doing in order to make it more efficient, more better. Mobility, if you think about transportation, going into self-driving vehicles, whatever they may be, whether they're cars or something like, you know, different types of hubs or whatever people are moving in the future. I think using driverless technologies is going to be very, very important in urban areas, especially. If you think about congestion and traffic jams, you know, I really very much look forward to the day when people are not making the choices necessarily behind the wheel. Mm-hmm. So I think it's crucially important. Also, at the same time, when you look at industrial processes, if you only just look at where we live and where we work in our built environment, and then think about how much, for example, of the energy, I mean, it's about 50% of all the energy used in developed world is actually going into heating and cooling systems. And you can do a lot of changes in those processes by using sensors, calculating all the time what is the optimal conditions,
yes,
and using software to change behavior. And all of that needs data. And we're going to have a massive amount of connected devices in the future. Over the next 5 years, we're going to see probably a 3-4-fold increase in connected devices. And that's, you know, stuff where which have sensors which can be analyzed and where the data can be sent to, you know, further optimization. And that's going to be a huge change. So it needs massive data infrastructure, which includes data security as a critical component, because otherwise it doesn't work out. But if you think about just for a second about how much we're using with the kind of way that we're using data, for example, every time you download a Netflix film or you watch something there, I mean, you're using data, and data centers are increasingly using more and more energy because the data sphere is growing. And currently the data centers use about maybe roughly 3% and kind of emit CO2, roughly 3% of the whole CO2 emission pie, which is about roughly about the same amount of, you know, or volume than what's going through the air transportation. So that we have to, in the future, also look at within the technology sector, how do we do this better? Data centers use less and less energy. And there, you kind of, when you dig into that, you see that artificial intelligence, for example, has a huge role. I mean, machine learning can do billions of computations very quickly, and no human could ever do that. So that they can adjust a data center cooling and energy needs every millisecond if they wanted to. And there are, you know, the energy savings potentially, that kind of an operation is already, you know, we can see it's about 25-30% less energy used by just using machine learning, for example. Those are huge. You know, it may sound kind of incremental, but when you think about the huge amount of energy and the CO2 in terms of volumes that can be saved, it becomes really a needle mover. So technology is very key. And that's why I think, you know, that's really where the future impact, like I mentioned before, is where I see is really crucial. And then there are separate technologies, like, you know, in the case of Logitech, for example, is, you know, video conferencing, which is kind of nascent in the firm, but it's very interesting. It's growing very rapidly, but video conferencing is, you know, is saving us a lot of time. I mean, for example, this way that we do the podcast now is that instead of coming over to London, you know, we can do it over the phone, and I could be here in Helsinki. You know, saves me time, saves the planet, and we can get it up and running and get it out there in a matter of hours. So that's all, you know, very specific technology. So there you can feel that the impact is already quite direct. And that's quite exciting because
interesting, yeah.
You know, you can really sort of make some of those are sort of what I call infrastructure cases, and the others are more specific. Adobe.
Yes.
I mean, think about Adobe, for example. If you can pick up digital publishing and not having kind of paper at all, we've been talking about a paperless office for decades already. You know, it's been around. The idea has been around. But slowly we're actually getting there. And I think it pays to kind of look at the leaders in that space, because every tree that is saved, it gives us more opportunity to actually absorb CO2 from the atmosphere. Because what is needed in the future is not just cutting down the CO2 levels. I mean, this is not just an exercise which is required to kind of reduce the damage that we do, but we also have to start getting stuff back from the atmosphere. And that's, you know, every tree saved is an impact. How do you measure that impact? That's another story. Because, you know, sometimes the financial industry is very focused, and the financial industry is very good at measuring stuff. We are measured on a daily basis. The return is there, but it's inescapable. And that's why, you know, maybe some managers, some firms, they really like the CO2 data, because that is something that can be already measured. And if you can kind of get ESG compliant by looking at your ESG sort of CO2 measurements and what's happening, how much you're polluting. But the stuff which is really difficult is where you can't put an exact number right now. And it's really the kind of non-financial area in some of the cases. I mean, it's social issues. I mean, for heaven's sake, I mean, employees, we talk about human resources. But when you dig down and kind of drill down into the how people actually use that golden resource, which they call human resources, it can be sometimes really, really sad reading. And if you're very good at your human resources and developing that human potential, creativity, the innovation capability, it's crucial. But how can you put a number to that? I mean, it's just something that, you know, it's not always there to be measured exactly. And I think that's where the challenge is, to, you know, really direct thinking to the direction that you can't always measure something, but you can make a qualitative assessment and look at that, you know, the potential against the strategy of the firm, if it makes sense that they can actually deliver a positive impact in the future, or are they just saying, are they just talking about it and just for the sake of compliance and becoming acceptable to investors? That's fascinating.
Yeah.
But it's hard to explain even to professionals who've been used to look at sustainability exercises and ESG integration, because this is not how you typically do things. I mean, this is, you know, I think it's somewhat different.
Yes, very, very interesting, because, you know, I have the benefit and fortune enough to be talking to all the different people that are doing, you know, these different approaches in different asset classes and products. And that's how I see it's very nice. And I refer to a couple of things, you know, to give examples to people, right? And to mention some of the other people, the things that they have said. So one thing I was going to say is to use kind of real examples. I liked it that you used the adult example with the paperless office, the tree saved, you know, the CO2. And it's kind of people, as maybe obvious as it looks or as it sounds, people kind of struggle to make the connection of the fact that we are not printing and we are sending. I did that last night, actually, with my life insurance. Never printed, sign it, send, gone, right? That's one less there. Then, and they asked me, do you want me to send it to you by post? And I'm saying, no, not really, right? Just get it by email and it's back with you within an hour. But you don't really think about it that much, right? And then like that, you have...
Even, JP, your mobile phone, for example. Think about how many devices... I mean, I'm a technology enthusiast. I mean, I love these gadgets. I love these things. I was in New York at a hotel. I mean, you can kind of guess which hotel it is, because the big store is right there and around the corner. And I asked the guys over there, what's the queue outside? This was in 2010. And the concierge said, wait, that's the new Apple thing. That's the iPad. And I thought, wow, I have to get one. But I've read about it, of course, obvious, but I had no clue what I would be able to use it for. But I just thought, I mean, this instinctively, I have to get this thing. But just to think about this phone that you have in front of you, this is replacing, you used to have a video recorder, you used to have a camera maybe, you used to have a fax machine, answering machine, you know, probably something like 14, 15 different devices, which is now inside your phone. And that is progress. And there's no doubt in my mind that progress will actually be even faster in going into the future. So we will get, you know, stuff done in a smarter way from here. And there's no doubt in my mind about that.
Yeah. But the point I was thinking about is that it's interesting to see how, one, you know, some of the companies struggle to deliver the message about, you know, the impact that they're having and how we struggle to see it, you know, that just very quickly or simply. And then I wanted to mention, you mentioned, we were using, I will promote them because they're really useful and it's great, but we're using Zoom, right, to record the audio. It's an incredible company. And again, I didn't even think about it, but you're right. You know, I don't need to go to Helsinki to have this meeting with you. And here we are. So that is one, you know, two less flights and all the CO2 emissions that they save. But again, I've never actually looked at Zoom reports on that as one of the impacts that they have, you know, to society.
I think actually, I mean, one of the challenges is that if you're a listed company, I mean, there are about 45,000 listed companies in the world, but there are about another sort of 2 million companies of something of a significant size out there, which are private. But if you're a listed company, you have to be transparent. And especially when you're talking about really the key areas of your strategy. This is cute. It's really funny. It's a bit strange and it's counter-logical, but you don't necessarily always want to tell all the good things about sustainability, what you're really going to be doing, because you don't want to get that message through to your competitors. See what I mean? So a listed company has to think about very carefully what they talk about strategy. Strategy is your key. Strategy is your crown jewel. I mean, you don't let it go. And that's why what I try to do is I try to understand the true strategy. The strategy is not the one which is on the website. It's not there. I mean, you can't find the real strategy there. The strategy is in the action that the company does, the kind of acquisition that they make, and, you know, what kind of people they hire, what kind of people, well, how does their leadership feel like? And you know, you can get ideas from there. But there are sometimes areas where they think they, especially if they think that they could be really competitive in that strategic choice. If they have a product or initiative which where they really feel that they have a competitive edge, they don't necessarily want to go and talk about it wide open, you know, because there may be other companies out there who will be quickly emulating, and you don't always want to show your cards, all of them opened up straight away. Yeah. So I think that's really one of the challenges in the listed space. In the private space, it's a bit different because there you can You know, you could be more internal and develop internally great strategies. And I don't see any reason why, you know, private companies, you know, wouldn't be equally sustainable or even better in sustainability than these tech companies.
Yeah. And then one more example I was going to mention, just because you mentioned sensors before as well, which I like it because it makes it real for people to understand and then trying to apply to other companies. And I have a bit of a relationship and there's a conflict on this one, but I think it's worth promoting them because I advise them on the messaging and a bit of the go-to-market strategy by the company. It's called Metricus, and this is basically an unlisted company. It's effectively cataloged as a fintech startup, although they're doing kind of measurement, with all sorts of measurements with sensors so that you can actually see how much real estate do you need, for example, as one of the products for your company, right? And then, but then also I wanted to mention, because you mentioned about saving energy, and I always remember because there was one bank that used this that product. They used all the sensors. They were going to open a whole new floor for 500 people. But when they looked at, you know, how many people were coming in and out of the building, because a lot of people work kind of agile now, right? And they work from home, etc. They realized that actually during the week, they don't get enough people to justify another floor. So they saved, you know, a couple of millions just by understanding the movement of their staff.
It's a great example. I mean, this is exactly what, that's what you do. I mean, there are three things that I look at. It's measure and then calculate and then use software to change or kind of find the optimal solution. So those are the three pillars. And construction industry, by the way, is a fantastic example of where you can, if you think about augmented reality, for example, if you have a digital print of digital design and you can go on site and you can see immediately against the digital design that, okay, wait, this is missing from the plan and we can't move forward until you fix that part in that corner because otherwise we can't install this and this. And it really saves a huge amount of time if you use that. And if you can think about all the optimization, all the avoided lorry drives back and forth in the city zone, for example, going there in vain, waiting for somebody to pick up something. There are so many things we can do smarter. If we can get it all, if we can even get, you know, a quarter of that fixed, it'll be a better planet.
Yeah. And do you use a specific company or tool to kind of try to measure that kind of impact, or do you just ask the companies for some extra information? Or?
Yeah, I mean, the way I do it, I mean, there's obviously probably a couple of different things how you will use. I mean, obviously, well, I mean, let's begin with, I mean, the impact idea is very core in the thinking process. I mean, you have to have an idea. Will this have an impact or not? But the way impact is currently measured by service providers, you're looking at, you know, some of the ways to tackle the SDGs. And there are, you know, that's a developing area. And we have been looking at one firm, which is called Impact Cubed. They have a very good solution. And I think, but there are probably others as well. So we are going through now. So what I've done with my fund is that I've looked at what is the result. So the problem here may be that you may end up in a sub-optimization if you optimize your portfolio with the impact, which you can actually do. I mean, you can get, you know, an external provider giving the calculation, showing you if you increase this and you decrease that, you get a better, more fully rounded impact. But what I do is I keep my process intact and I see what the outcome is. And my assumption is that the outcomes should be fully rounded and a pretty balanced impact. And it turns out the early results are showing now that obviously environmentally we have a huge positive impact. But, you know, different and sort of really separating from other green or technology funds, we don't give back on the other social metrics very much because, for example, tax-wise, we get pretty neutral and actually quite good results. Our impact in less developed countries, the economic growth impact there is actually quite positive. So that despite many of the funds that they happen to be, you know, quite well impacted in specific areas, but then you give up and you actually have a negative impact. In some of the other SDG areas, we happen to be, you know, either the process is it just happens to be right, but it gets the kind of result that I expect. So, I mean, to reiterate, I don't optimize the impact by looking at what the impact as measured is. I try to have an idea where the impact, the total impact would be now and in the future. And then I look at where we are currently now. And does it give me the kind of feeling that, okay, we have a balanced impact portfolio, so to speak. So that's how we began to look at it. And, you know, quite frankly, there aren't that many fund managers or funds that are reporting their impact, but we are kind of considering and looking to be among the first ones in the near future to do so. So we'll see what happens.
Perfect. And then you mentioned the future. So if we just kind of start going towards, I'm sure that we can have such a nice conversation for a long time. But just as we start trying to come to the wrap up of the episode, I wanted to just make sure that we cover that part. So you imagine the future, right? And as we can tell, and people seems to be that kind of equity seems to be kind of one of the easier ways to set up funds and invest. Obviously, there are opportunities on fixed income, especially around, you know, social bonds. I was talking to a large hedge fund in London here as well, focusing on fixed income, and they didn't even know about the existence of them, which is always interesting. And I like that, you know, just that people don't know about these assets and these products that are available. And then obviously we have private equity as kind of seems to be the one that is focusing on the pure kind of impact investment, you know, with this kind of the social angle, especially. And again, for context, I always like, you know, see people understand. So kind of ESG, sustainable investment, you know, keeps growing. The GSI report, I think last year was showing that it grew about 34% to about 30 trillion. And out of, let's say, 300 trillion that we have available, but only, again, impact seems to be somewhere between, some people say 3 trillion, some people say 1 trillion, right? So I always ask, how do we actually scale this? So how do we, you know, make sure that we can grow so that we make sure it's a question of, you know, like EQ, Blue Planet needs to, you know, grow to billions, or is it more organizations coming into the fixed income, which is actually, by the way, a large part of most of the investment on ESG, or is it more private equities kind of role because of the amount of capital that they have available as well? What do you think about that? I mean, I know that there's no one answer, but
I think what we're really doing here at the moment, this conversation is about sharing ideas and how you can think about impact. And I think there's no silver bullet, but I think the more ways that you can think about impact and positive impact, the better. What I would hate to see, and this is one of the pitfalls of the ESG community, which, by the way, is generally speaking, fantastically open. I have never seen in the financial markets a similarly open and sharing
community. Collaborative, and very collaborative.
Collaborative, yeah. Open to, you know, introductions and everything. It is working exactly as we have all committed to in the PRI signatories, for example. But one of the pitfalls is that impact investing for the purist is an investment where you're allocating capital to achieve a specific social cause, for example. And, you know, if you start to kind of defend your own sandbox, if I may use that description, and you just say that, okay, this is not pure impact. Pure impact is what we do. And that is, you know, and arguably that's more like philanthropy. And actually, it probably a good way to allocate assets as well. I'm not saying that that's wrong. But if we allow the impact to be perceived as something worthwhile pursuing, and really kind of identifying with what I think is going to be a massively important in the future. What is the purpose of corporations going on and into the future? I mean, that's a whole different kind of a conversation, is the changing purpose of a corporation. So instead of just looking at the shareholder value, looking at all the stakeholders and looking at how you're dealing with that in the future is so important. And when people become to, and they get comfortable that these ideas actually would work in almost any kind of an investment sort of asset class, like in, hopefully in my case, I have shown that it works in equities, but it does work in fixed income as well. Definitely in private equity, even venture capital. And you just let it go. And at the same time, because the clients and the end demand is demanding for these types of corporations and their products, and within those corporations, that kind of purpose, I think we're moving into the right direction. But, you know, avoiding the pitfall, kind of pointing out that, you know, that's strictly not what you should be doing. I mean, we are doing the right thing. So I think that's wrong. What I think is, in my view, is right is, you know, hey, this is what I found interesting and fascinating. And this is the kind of stories that we find around us. And this is how we've done. And then sharing and exploring, that's the right way forward. There's one thing where we have added philanthropy to our Blue Planet Fund, which hasn't been done in my knowledge anywhere else, is that we have opened up a share class, which we call, or a fund series called the BSAG.
Yes.
BSAG, if you go to our website, stands for Baltic Sea Action Group. And that is a collaboration that we do over here for the benefit of Baltic Sea. And Baltic Sea Action Group is a nonprofit organization which is looking at different ways to get a systemic change, helping the Baltic Sea. They're looking at regenerative agriculture, which is actually one of the themes that I invest in my fund as well. So we have a lot of sort of touching points. But this fund is at share class, and that series gives 85% of my management fee directly to the benefit of Baltic Sea Action Group for their research and action. So it's one way to have a fund which has a financial target but has philanthropy in it. And I think that is leading. I haven't seen anything like that anywhere else. And you know, hopefully others find the same kind of way, because that's how you can, you know, give up a little portion of your financial return directly for a good cause. And I think that's an interesting concept.
Yes, very much so. Very much so. And maybe not for this time, but for a separate conversation, I would very much like to learn more about that, especially because of the values that we were talking about, you know, given that when you talk to some of the people in the market, you know, they think that if you do anything under, you know, 150 million for a fund is kind of not sustainable. And then in this case, you're even giving, you know, most of the fees away, which is lowable to say, or noble, you know. So,
well, I mean, if you're dealing with a technology kind of future related investments and the kind of space that I'm really coming from, where I spend a lot of my time in analyzing and looking at opportunities, you have to think about, now this is like a little bit like venture capital, is that you jump off the cliff, and like Reid Hoffman, whose podcast is very nice and I follow that almost every time. Yeah. He always describes the VC operation as you jump off the cliff and try to build the airplane while you're flying. So here, I mean, there's no point if we want to do, you know, achieve impact and do good things, but we can start doing already now. Why wait until we're 2 billion and then, you know, start giving a little bit something? You know, logically, and I think sincerely, this is where we also want to get people to realize that, okay, well, there are maybe different opportunities to invest my money than the standard funds available out there. And hopefully the message gets through at some point. I'm sure it will.
Brilliant. And the last two questions, if you don't mind me asking, are a little bit more on the personal side. And then you told me a little bit of the story, you know, how you went from, and you mentioned earlier as well, how you went from managing one type of fund, then now, you know, doing what you're doing. And I think it's quite kind of inspirational for any, inverted commas, traditional fund manager, you know, that you can, you know, convert yourself, right? But is there anything specifically you can share with us, or maybe perhaps, you know, somebody that, or something that inspired you to do this?
I'm sure when you talk to a lot of the people and in your series as well, I mean, I spent 30 years in the financial markets, so I've been inspired by a lot of people. I mean, one of the big inspirations for me has been Jack Bogle, who recently passed on. And I started personally a connection with Vanguard with Jack Bogle by presenting one of my ideas directly to him, and he responded. I thought it was so fantastic to be able to collaborate with a firm like Vanguard, and especially the way that he designed that the purpose of that company is crystal clear. that we're going to be doing this for the benefit of the unit holders. Our aim is to get better financial results for long-term savings for everybody. It's such a fantastically inspirational story. But at the same time, you know, I always regarded myself as a bit of a revolutionary, and I like to shake things up a bit, and not just a little bit. And that's why, you know, doing something from scratch and building something from, you know, what hasn't been there before is kind of natural to me. It may not be natural to everybody else, but I find it, you know, almost somehow purifying to be able to, you know, every now and then shake things up a little bit. I love that.
And is there anyone in particular that kind of that helped you through this process when you started building this from scratch?
Well, I have to say that talking about, especially about the sustainability, there have been some conversations with some of the leading asset owners here in the Nordics. And these are kind of private and kind of really show the way that how they think about things. And I would say that without singling out anyone in person, I think the whole community is very inspirational. I mean, I have to say one of the first meetings in the FinCIF, which is, by the way, turning 10 years, celebrating 10th anniversary next year. One of the first meetings is we were talking about ethical investing. There was somebody giving a presentation about ethical investing, about nuclear weapons. I sort of asked the silly question that, okay, so we don't like the nuclear weapons now or the nuclear defense. So does it mean that you can't invest in the US government bonds? And by the way, you can chop out the French and the UK and a couple of other nice countries as well, because they are financing that kind of defense. And I thought immediately, so, you know, this is a relevant question. In a way, it is kind of, and it was very challenging. But I was very positively surprised to see that, okay, yeah, we get what you mean. But, you know, this is exactly the kind of counter-positioning and counter-arguments where you kind of, in a dialogue, develop an understanding what is the process and what is the difference between ethics and sustainability and all of these things. So it's really an open dialogue, which is really helpful in order to understand what is the best way for you to get things done. Because getting into dogmatics and the kind of different beliefs and very sort of position approaches is not helpful. And that's been very good that it isn't so.
I hear. So one before the last question. So this is about leadership. And obviously you've been around, you know, in the market for a while. So do you have any views, personal views around what is a leader or what is to be a good leader, or in this case, an impact leader?
If you think about a business leader and a kind of a CEO, you have to have an ability to show that you really mean what you're saying. But I think it's a sincerity, an openness to approach the challenges that we have and really be bold about it. I mean, it's leadership, but it's about courage. It's about courage to take the first step and actually be able to come out into the open. Okay, we're going to be doing this, even in sort of situations which kind of can come up from adversity. Okay, well, we did this wrong. We have to correct this. And let me explain how we thought about the whole, our approach. So to me, it's about courage to go and test waters which haven't been yet tested, because without that courage, there is no progress. There's always, I mean, you always need that courageous one, first soldier who kind of moves on. That's leadership. That's, by the way, how the Finnish Army in the Second World War defined leadership. These men cannot be led from behind. They must be led from the front. And that is a unique historical characteristic of Finns.
Fantastic. Thank you for that. And how can people get in touch with us and OEQ as a management?
Absolutely LinkedIn. I'm open to all sustainability thinkers and people who want to share and get into contact with me. So absolutely LinkedIn. Yeah, and I think that's the best way. Absolutely. I think that's very welcome. I'm always open and, you know, glad to be able to help if I can.
Brilliant. And one last call to action for our listeners?
think about your choices, your daily choices. What do you consume yourself? I mean, how do you get to work? Do you need the next new car? Do you need, you know, whatever gadget that you think that you, you know, feel that you need right now, but do you really need to own everything, for example? And also think about, where are your savings going? I mean, think about it. I mean, ask your savings and pension provider. I mean, what is my distribution of my savings? How sustainable is my savings? Am I future-proof with my savings? That's the key question.
Fantastic. And on that point, thank you for that. On that point, again, there are some different reports, but you know, I thought I'd mention that they say that if you allocate your savings, your pension to impact investing, or are more likely to have like 27 times the impact compared to like some of the other changes that you can make. So that's kind of just, you know, for people to corroborate and some food for thought. But thank you so much, Esa. That was fantastic. I really enjoyed the conversation. I hope you enjoyed it too.
Thanks for having me, Chepi. It's been a pleasure and a privilege. I'm very honored. You have a great podcast, and I hope more and more people will listen and share their thoughts and opinions. It's been a joy. It's so important that you're doing it. So yeah, thanks very much.
Thank you. My pleasure, my honor. Thank you so much. So it is bye for now until our next episode of Impact Leaders. Please remember to check our sponsors' websites for upcoming events, and do get in touch if you need anything or if you have any questions. Thank you so much. Goodbye for now.
This was Impact Leaders. Impact Leaders is brought to you by Fast Forward 2030 and Real Changers. Visit fastforward2030.com to learn how to include the global goals into your business models, and realchangers.com to find talent and careers with impact.